Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Another shot at inflation. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Thursday, March 23rd, glad you could be with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The Federal Reserve has raised interest rates again to tame inflation, but also suggested it might now take a pause. We'll have analysis.
At least five people have been killed by falling trees in California's latest severe weather, plus a rare tornado hits the L.A. area.
A Manhattan grand jury is set to hear more testimony today in the Donald Trump hush money case. The panel did not meet yesterday.
And as the NCAA tournament resumes this evening, a look at the Sweet 16 teams with common traits.
They're older. They are good at dominating games by boosting the amount of possessions they have, and they do this by forcing turnovers and grabbing rebounds. And that is basically just simple math of the more possessions you have, the more points you could score.
Lane Higgins at the Wall Street Journal on the habits of highly effective March Madness teams. Grand jury testimony is expected to resume today for the panel investigating Donald Trump's role in a hush money payment to a porn star. Reports say the group in Manhattan was instructed not to meet yesterday. The decision added more suspense and drama to any potential indictment of the former president. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Media outlets like Insider and the Wall Street Journal say the district attorney's office notified court officials Tuesday night about the change in plans. It wasn't clear what prompted the change. The jury could still hear from additional witnesses, or prosecutors could formally present charges, which is the final step before the panel votes on whether to indict. While the timing of any possible surrender by Mr. Trump is unknown, it's not expected this week. And any potential indictment wouldn't be public until it is unsealed by a judge. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. Mr. Trump has said he didn't do anything wrong and accused Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg, a Democrat, of damaging his electoral prospects. The New York City Police Department said it was ready to respond to any protests or counter-protests. The strange weather in California keeps getting more unusual. At least one person was injured after a rare tornado hit a city just southeast of Los Angeles yesterday. The National Weather Service says the tornado briefly touched down in an industrial park and warehouse district in the city of Montebello. It had estimated peak winds of 110 miles per hour, the strongest of its kind to hit the LA area since 1983. The intense microcell, as it was described, damaged at least 17 buildings. The city says 11 of them were so severely damaged that the fire department deemed them too dangerous to use. Ross Garcia was inside a building that sustained damage.
After the debris and the noise stopped, I went outside and half of the building roof was ripped out and people came out in confusion, and then pipes were busted, and it was a mess.
Separately, a tornado was confirmed on Tuesday in the city of Carpinteria in Santa Barbara, where several mobile homes were damaged, with estimated winds of up to 75 miles an hour. Credit cards, car loans, and home equity lines of credit are getting expensive again for the ninth straight time. In its battle to contain inflation, the Federal Reserve approved another interest rate increase. Yesterday's move was a quarter of a percentage point. However, the central bank indicated that yesterday's move could be the last one for the time being, given recent banking system turmoil. Fed Chair Jerome Powell.
We believe, however, that events in the banking system over the past 2 weeks are likely to result in tighter credit conditions for households and businesses, which would in turn affect economic outcomes. It is too soon to determine the extent of these effects, and therefore too soon to tell how monetary policy should respond.
Stocks initially rose after the Fed announcement, but then slumped the rest of the day. Part of the downward turn is from Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen telling lawmakers that she wasn't considering ways to provide broad guarantees to uninsured bank deposits. The major indexes all lost about 1.6% each. The Dell Technologies semi-annual sale starts now with limited quantity deals on select performance PCs powered by 12th Gen Intel Core processors. Save on select Vostro laptops with built-in security features and select Latitude laptops with enhanced privacy, collaboration, and connectivity. Save on select essential accessories, plus free shipping and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Thursday. Marathon budget hearings have begun. Yesterday alone, there were three separate Senate Appropriations Subcommittee meetings. Today, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg speaks to lawmakers about his department's budget. Meanwhile, Republicans have been quick to rip President Biden's $6.9 trillion budget proposal. Virginia Congressman Ben Klein tweeted, "It continues us on the downward economic spiral of more taxes, more debt, more inflation." He says House Republicans will put forward a budget that actually works for Americans, not against them. How so? Congressman, your take.
Yeah, it just continues more of the same, and that's what the American people want are rejecting. More deficit spending, you know, more debt piled onto the American people, and more inflation, putting the cost of living and the American dream out of reach for so many.
All right, so on your side of the aisle, then, a budget's going to look like what?
Well, I'm the Budget Task Force Chairman for the Republican Study Committee, which is the largest caucus of Republicans in the conference, about 170 of us. We're going to be putting out a budget that balances in 10 years without touching Social Security or Medicare for future, for current recipients. But we want to make sure that we address woke and weaponized government. So we're going to be zeroing out and eliminating a lot of unnecessary and abusive federal programs that have been co-opted to push this Biden liberal agenda.
Which ones, Congressman? Do we have specifics yet?
Well, that's for the fun of releasing the budget to much fanfare. We will be doing that in the next couple of weeks, and we will be having a hearing Thursday on the president's budget in the budget committee. You know, the budget committee is going to also produce a budget. I'm glad to be on the budget committee with my friend Chair Jody Arrington from Texas. We're going to be putting out a budget that is going to also help lead us to balance and hopefully will attack many of the same woke and wasteful programs that we're going to be doing in RSC.
All right. You know, the question has come up. Editorials have been written about it. How do you balance a federal budget in just 10 years without touching two big monsters like Social Security and Medicare?
Well, you have to really cut more than just a shave off of many of these programs. Now, many of these programs shouldn't even be federal programs. If anything, they should be either block grants to the states to let the states administer them, like the Medicaid program, which provides health insurance for individuals who can't otherwise get health insurance through the markets. But, you know, these programs have been administered in a 50-50 split with the states, but that provides for a lot of duplication and a lot of bureaucracy, both in Washington and at the state level. I know Virginia can do a better job administering this program than Washington ever could. So, you know, block granting Medicaid to the states is one example, and work requirements for welfare benefits is another example of how we're going to find the savings, how we're going to move beyond this COVID-era glut of spending, which has really done a number on our balance sheet.
We're speaking with Virginia Republican Congressman Ben Klein. How much are these budget discussions going to be a window into the debt ceiling debate?
You know, they are intertwined. The Freedom Caucus, which I'm a member of, has put out principles talking about not only cutting wasteful spending and moving us back to pre-COVID spending levels, but also providing for growth in this country. We want to, we know that we can help balance the budget faster if this country is growing more rapidly. So getting us out of this malaise of the Biden administration when it comes to energy policy, restoring the energy independence of the Trump administration, and moving us forward through reforms, controlling our border, addressing the drug crisis, all of these things will help spur growth and economically, and that's what the Freedom Caucus is incorporating into the debt ceiling conversations, and I'm proud to stand with them on that.
All right, so the president has said no negotiations regarding the debt ceiling, but are there cuts you'd specifically want in those talks?
You know, as much as the president thinks he is the dictator in chief, he is not. He lives in a constitutional republic, and he has to negotiate. So when the House is controlled by Republicans, you can't just say my way or the highway. Kevin McCarthy wants to sit down with the president, talk about how we get to a debt ceiling increase to preserve the full faith and credit of the United States. So we will have those negotiations, whether he wants to, or whether the president wants to or not. And it's a question of, are they going to be serious, or is he going to just play more brinksmanship as he has in the past?
Congressman Ben Klein, Republican from Virginia. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
A federal judge has found that special counsel Jack Smith's team presented convincing evidence President Trump misled his own lawyers about his retention of classified documents after leaving the White House. The judge made that finding Friday in a sealed decision, siding with federal prosecutors in their bid to bypass attorney-client privilege claims raised by one of Trump's lawyers, Evan Corcoran, and compel him to provide more testimony because the privilege doesn't cover discussions of criminal activity. A three-judge appeals court panel yesterday denied Trump's request to halt that order, saying Corcoran must relinquish documents related to the special counsel's probe.
Number two.
A body was found last night in the Colorado woods near the abandoned car that belonged to a 17-year-old student accused of shooting two administrators at his Denver high school earlier in the day. Park County Sheriff Tom McGraw said the body was discovered not far from the car in a remote mountain area about 50 miles southwest of Denver.
It was up in the woods. It was, like I said, I'm guessing probably about 0.2 miles from the vehicle. Like I said, it's not a heavily wooded area, but it's kind of steep.
McGraw declined to reveal more information about the body or cause of death. Earlier in the day, Denver police identified the suspect as Austin Lyle. He's accused of shooting two administrators who were searching him for weapons, a daily requirement because of the boy's behavioral issues.
Number three.
Six highway workers in Maryland died Wednesday after a car entered a work zone and struck them. The crash at the inner loop of Interstate 695, known as the Baltimore Beltway, occurred shortly after noon. An Acura driven by a 54-year-old woman went in between barriers, hit the workers, and overturned. It's not clear why the car went into the work zone. Ludwig van Beethoven's head of hair is yielding new clues about his health problems and his ancestry. Nearly two centuries after his life, an international team of researchers used snipped pieces of his hair to sequence Beethoven's genome. The team says by studying the DNA, they found genetic risk for liver disease and evidence of a hepatitis B infection, but they didn't find a genetic cause for his deafness. As more genes are linked to health conditions, researchers can compare the findings with Beethoven's genome to glean new information about his health.
We have to study people like Beethoven to discover these things?
I think that's pretty cool.
200 years ago?
That's amazing.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Glad you're with us. Alabama may not appear to have all that much in common with Princeton when it comes to the NCAA basketball tournament, but as it turns out, the biggest underdogs and the clearest title contenders share a handful of characteristics. It's a story by Lane Higgins, sports reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Lane, like what?
They're older. They are good at dominating games by boosting the amount of possessions they have. And they do this by forcing turnovers and grabbing rebounds. And that is basically just simple math of the more possessions you have, the more points you could score, the less possessions your opponent has, the less points they could score. It's pretty straightforward. And also, one of the things that's highly variable is three-point shooting night in, night out. So you want a team that can shoot threes because that's clearly a way that the game has developed and moved, but you don't want them so reliant on it that if you get one random off night and it happens to be in a single elimination tournament like the NCAA tournament, you're doomed. And, you know, you tend to have to play some pretty good defense because it doesn't matter how great your offense is.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't defend, you have problems. And Purdue last year is actually a great example of that in that they had one of the best offenses in the country, could not defend at all, and what do you know, got bounced by St. Peter's.
Why is it that it's hard to repeat as champ?
Well, if you look at the first quality of these teams, which is the veteran presence, that's one of the hardest things to have year to year is that continuity. Because if you have freshmen and sophomores that are good enough to start, odds are high that they're going to test the waters in the draft and leave after that year. And if you have these juniors and seniors, you know, maybe they're good and they'll stay, but eventually they are going to run out of eligibility. So if you have a situation like Kansas last year where pretty much 75% of the points they scored, the players that scored them walked out the door, either to the NBA or to graduation. Like, it's really, really hard, no matter how deep, no matter how well you recruit, to get back and do that. And if you look at the last six tournaments, there hasn't been a repeat champion. And not only that, the champion hasn't even made it to the Sweet 16. And I think that's just a testament of just how many things need to come together to win a championship in the first place. And, you know, you look back to the last team to repeat, which was Florida in 06-07. They brought back pretty much every single player. So they were young when they won it in 06, and they were a little more veteran, and everyone was pretty much still there with Hakeem Noah and Al Horford in 2007.
We're speaking with Lane Higgins, sports reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her story is called The Four Habits of Highly Effective March Madness Teams. Why is it also that an FDU, the shortest team in the NCAA tournament, as you pointed out, could beat the tallest team and a number one seed in Purdue?
Well, there's both qualities of Purdue and qualities of Fairleigh Dickinson that made that possible. Starting off with Purdue, obviously Zach Edey is just like a towering presence in the post. However, the Purdue system works by feeding him, and if he can't get layups or an easy, you know, post shot, then they'll kick it out to the guards who are freshmen. And, you know, freshman guards are great, but they tend to be a little more high variable, I would say. And, you know, Purdue was not shooting well from three, and it also just wasn't getting that many opportunities. So if you have a night where you're turning it over a lot, which Purdue was, and you're not shooting well, you know, you're susceptible. So that was one thing that Tobin Anderson, the coach at Fairleigh Dickinson, basically went in and said, look, they're vulnerable here. Like, let's attack that.
Lane Higgins, sports reporter at the Wall Street Journal. This show was sponsored by BetterHelp. You know, with every day that goes by, we change and we grow. Getting to know yourself is a lifelong process, and sometimes we don't know what we want or why we react to things the way we do. That's where therapy can come in. It's all about deepening your self-awareness and understanding. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist who can take you on a journey of self-discovery from wherever you are. Through therapy, you can learn positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. BetterHelp can empower you to be the best version of yourself. It's entirely online, and it's designed to be flexible and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional cost. Discover your potential with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/deal today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, BetterHelp.com/deal.
Exclusive stories and unique perspectives. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us, and welcome into Thursday, March 23. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Fed raises interest rates for the ninth consecutive meeting. Five people killed by falling trees during California storms, and a rare tornado for the L.A. area. A judge in Wyoming temporarily blocks a new abortion ban. Grand jury testimony resumes today for former President Trump. Celebrities, including Jake Paul and Lindsay Lohan, hit with fines for failing to disclose that they were paid to promote crypto. NCAA tournament resumes this evening, and a so-called ugly dog finds an adoptive family in Florida. That story in about 20 minutes. There's a lot we still don't know about Gen Z when it comes to the housing market, since a large chunk of the generation is just starting out on their own. But compared with millennials, who came of age in the shadow of the Great Recession and the housing bust, Gen Zers have been lucky, and some are taking advantage. Here's James Rodriguez, senior real estate reporter at Insider. James, explain.
Well, if you think about it, Gen Zers, you know, they came up kind of in the aftermath of the Great Recession. They've seen home prices boom since then. You know, unlike millennials who kind of either graduated college into the Great Recession or had their early career shaped by it, you know, Gen Zers have really just seen home prices boom over the past decade, especially you know, that was hammered home during the pandemic. And now what we're seeing is they're using technology and access to information, you know, things that previous generations could have only dreamed of at their age, to really claim their piece of the real estate pie, so to speak. And so, you know, I talk to investors who are, you know, maybe they live in high income, or they're high income investors who live in expensive areas like Seattle or New York. And they're investing in places like the Sun Belt or Midwest, where home prices are cheaper, and they're building these real estate portfolios to kind of escape that 9-to-5 grind.
Yeah, explain. It's interesting. You touched on it a little bit, but you said that this Gen Z just has a rosier view of real estate investing than Gen Z, and I think, a rosier outlook compared to millennials, and that's largely based on luck, right, or timing here.
Yeah, you know, even like I mentioned, growing up in the aftermath of the recession, seeing home prices kind of go crazy during that recovery, and then also they kind of were largely able to avoid economic calamity when the pandemic struck, thanks to, you know, government support, a strong job market. So they just don't have those same battle scars from the housing market's collapse in 2008 that millennials do. And so, you know, a 2020 survey by Gen Z Planet showed that 87% of Gen Z respondents said they wanted to own a home in the future, compared to just 63% of millennial respondents. So, you know, we do see, like you said, this rosier view of just the real estate market in general.
We're speaking with James Rodriguez, senior real estate reporter at Insider. He's got a piece called Gen Z is Coming for the Housing Market. You gave this anecdote about this Soli Cayetano from the San Francisco Bay Area. Explain what she did.
So, you know, during the pandemic, like a lot of, she was a college senior when the pandemic struck, and she had a lot of time on her hands. And so she really started looking into the real estate market, and, you know, she began listening to podcasts, going through online forums like Bigger Pockets, and just kind of learning all she could about what it took to be a real estate investor. And then she was actually able to pour her savings from working jobs in college. She's a self-described hustler who got her first job at 14. And she was able to put down a 20% down payment on a roughly $100,000 home in Cincinnati. And she uses landlord software to manage it. And she, while she was just 22 at the time, she's kind of partnered with other investors and has built out this portfolio of about 36 units,
wow,
mostly in Ohio and Georgia, even though she continues to live in the Bay Area. And really, technology and just kind of the access to information that she had at such a young age really helped her build out that portfolio. Now she focuses on that, you know, real estate portfolio full time, as well as, you know, guiding other investors through the process through online courses.
Wow. I thought it was interesting, too. You said the ranks of Gen Z homeowners will almost certainly grow in the coming years. Do you mean through what Miss Cayetano has done or other methods? Because home prices just seem so, they seem so high. This is like that starter home just seems to have vanished from builders' plans.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's not a lot of great data out there on how many Gen Zers are going as far as Cayetano did. But you know, what we are seeing is, you know, LendingTree did a study that suggested that about 10% of home buyers in 2021, at least across the 50 largest U.S. metros, were Gen Zers. And I think, you know, we saw, you know, even though millennials have encountered so many challenges, they accounted for 43% of home buyers in 2021. And so I think it's kind of a function of, you know, Gen Zers are going to grow up as well. They're going to kind of reach that next stage of life. They're going to reach higher incomes. And so you're going to see that 10% figure likely rise in the coming years.
Thanks, James. James Rodriguez, senior real estate reporter at Insider.
Today's Mic Drop is brought to you by Dell. For your small business needs, call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Friday Eve. It is time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we know how unhappy people get when they don't get their Amazon packages on time, so you've got to hand it to one North Carolina driver who went above and beyond to make sure one was delivered. Video of the delivery has gone viral and shows a driver carrying a package through the scene of a police standoff. SWAT team members there were reportedly engaged in a nearly 24-hour standoff with an armed suspect. In the clip, which has been watched nearly 7 million times, the driver in a blue Amazon vest strolls nonchalantly along a street lined with flashing police cars as officers look on. The driver gets momentarily stopped from entering the heavily patrolled property, only to casually hand the package to a SWAT team member who heads toward the apartment with it in tow. The steel nerve driver then gets out his phone, presumably to check off the order, before snapping a picture of the scene to show his friends later. Commenters to the video had a lot of praise for the driver's commitment and some jokes. One wrote that Amazon drivers deliver through rain, snow, sleet, and SWAT. Another joked that the driver might have been more afraid of Jeff Bezos than he was of a little police activity.
This is bizarre.
Yeah.
Like you said, he just strolled through. Like, there was no yellow caution tape set up 50 yards back where he crossed or something.
Or didn't think to, ask somebody, like all the police cars, all the police presence there, like asking, is it okay if I come through here? Just kind of kept on walking until somebody just stopped him. And it was like, here, we'll take that package for you.
Hey, I see you guys have weapons drawn and aimed at this building. Yeah. Would you mind if I just went by and delivered this package? That seemed to have been what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, there are rules, too. Maybe he didn't feel good about giving up the package to someone who was not the rightful owner of it. Jeez. They have rules about those kind of things, so who knows?
I mean, I've been to those hostage scenes or standoff scenes before, like in my old reporting days. Usually they're cordoned off. Like, you can't get anywhere near there.
Well, after 24 hours, it was 24 hours in or whatever, I guess they figured, they're like, things got a little more relaxed, I guess, at that point.
Wow.
And old school basketball fans often lament how NBA players don't play tough-nosed defense anymore, but even by today's standard, this was a little over the top. Fans were left laughing over a moment in last night's Dallas Golden State game, where the Mavericks defended the wrong end of the court, leaving the Warriors to score the easiest basket you'll ever see. Video of the play has been circulating online, and at first, people assumed Dallas just had a total brain freeze. Later, Mavs owner Mark Cuban explained on Twitter. Cuban wrote that the ball was awarded to the Mavericks on an inbound play, but during a timeout, refs changed their mind and gave it to the Warriors. By then, the Mavericks had taken position on the other side of the court, leaving them helpless when the ball was then given to Golden State. Cuban ripped the refs for not telling the Mavericks that the call was changed. Worst part about it was the final score, which saw Dallas lose by just 2 points.
Of course. This is indirectly tied to the dunk that ensued after the Warriors inbounded the ball.
That's crazy that they didn't say anything about that.
Even three, I watched the video, three of the Warriors players, as the ball was about to be inbounded, started making their way down the other end of the floor.
Right, yeah.
They were confused.
Yeah, because if you don't see anybody there defending the basket, you think that you're in the wrong spot, right? Because when does that ever happen?
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Thank you, Mike.
Whether you own a local business or a global one, you know that these days, generating growth is a challenge. By teaming with Bank of America, you'll not just stay ahead of the curve, you'll move it. With access to experts, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter, locally and globally. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Copyright 2023 Bank of America N.A.
Hey, glad you're with us. That morning cup of coffee might provide more benefits than just a quick energy boost. New research is suggesting that consuming higher levels of caffeine could help curb body fat and reduce the risk of developing type 2 diabetes. The research was published in the journal BMJ Medicine. Those who had genes that metabolized caffeine at a faster rate were associated with having a lower body mass index and lower whole body fat mass. They were also found to have a reduced risk of type 2 diabetes. However, caffeine's benefits should be weighed against its potentially dangerous side effects. Dr. Amit Ergin, an endocrinologist in Florida with a specialty in diabetes care, told Fox News that caffeine can have some potentially harmful side effects if abused and over-supersized. He says excessive caffeine consumption can lead to insomnia, palpitations, even behavioral issues. The FDA recommends sticking to 400 milligrams of caffeine per day. That's about 4 to 5 cups of coffee. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The Federal Reserve has approved another 0.25 percentage point interest rate increase, but signaled banking system turmoil might end its rate rises sooner than seemed likely 2 weeks ago. Fed Chair Jerome Powell.
The process of getting inflation back down to 2% has a long way to go and is likely to be bumpy.
Yesterday's decision marked the Fed's 9th consecutive rate increase. Investors weren't too happy with the news, sending the Dow Industrials tumbling 530.
Number two.
The grand jury that will weigh a possible indictment of former President Trump had another day off Wednesday, delaying any action against him until today at the earliest. The Manhattan District Attorney is investigating whether Trump broke any laws when the Trump Organization reimbursed his then lawyer for a payment to porn star Stormy Daniels to keep her quiet about an alleged sexual encounter she says she had with Trump in 2006. Prosecutors are considering whether to charge Trump in relation to misstating the purpose of the payment in business records, which could be a felony if it were done to cover up another crime.
Number three.
A rare tornado touched down in the Los Angeles suburb of Montebello yesterday, ripping roofs off a line of commercial buildings and sending the debris twisting into the sky and across a city block, injuring at least one person. High winds hit other parts of the state, like Santa Cruz.
It's been a crazy year as far as rain already, and the winds have been pretty consistent, sometimes with the rain. But, like, I've never heard of 80-mile-an-hour winds.
The rare and violent weather came amid a strong late-season Pacific storm that brought more rain and snow to saturated California. A rare drug-resistant bacteria that's been found in some recently recalled eye drops is continuing to lead to injuries. The CDC says 3 people have died and 8 people have reported vision loss, in addition to 4 reports of surgical removal of an eyeball. The eye drops, artificial tears from Ezra Care and Delsim Pharma, were recalled last month. Well, if you've got $12 million, you could become the owner of a sprawling California ranch once owned by John Wayne. The ranch, 2,000 acres in Sage, has hit the market. The Western Oasis, built in 1950, was used by Wayne during the 70s. Realtor.com says the actor would invite guests out for horseback riding, shooting, and other ranching activities.
2,000 acres. That's a lot of fun. That's a lot of hide and seek right there.
Yeah.
Hide and seek for days. The Dell Technologies semi-annual sale starts now with limited quantity deals on select performance PCs powered by 12th gen Intel Core processors. Save on select Vostro laptops with built-in security features and select Latitude laptops with enhanced privacy, collaboration, and connectivity. Save on select essential accessories, plus free shipping and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Glad you're with us. A dog in Orlando, Florida now has a forever family after an animal rescue revealed on Facebook disheartening comments that were reportedly made about her appearance. Lena is a cur mix, a blend of hound dog, terrier, and feist. She arrived at Orange County Animal Services over the holiday season. Fox 35 Orlando says the previous owner told the shelter Lena was born with slight deformities under both her eyes. The Animal Services Center wrote in a Facebook post that the hard part is hearing the comments made about her. Some of them include, "She looks so ugly," and "She'll never get adopted." Lena was later sent to Rescue Dogs Dream, a small foster-based rescue which performed a medical procedure to remove Lena's painful and thick raised scars. Her new family was awaiting her recovery before sharing the adoption news. Things are much better now that Lena, by the way, has embraced potty training and dialed back her surfing of the kitchen counters. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka and Mike Gavin, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.